Hi, you're tuned to Truth News Radio on the 17th of September 2016. My name's Harold Fenton. Great to have you aboard. I've got several topics to cover today. I'm going to begin with 9/11, and I'm going to bring you some news and some tidbits that have surfaced in the wake of the 15th anniversary of September 11. And a couple of things that I hadn't seen before, and some very, very important news, actually, from the scientific end of the research. After that, I want to talk a little about Syrian barrel bombs, and I want to just provide some background information on that. I think most people are aware of the propaganda effect of the use of that term, but, you know, the more you look into it, the more clear it is that that this phrase, barrel bombs, has been conceived and used simply for the purpose of demonizing one side in a conflict. It's very interesting when you actually look into this and you find out what's actually going on with it. Now, if we have time towards the end of the show, I'm going to be playing to you some of Malcolm Roberts' maiden speech in the Senate, and I will give you my commentary on that. Malcolm Roberts made his maiden speech in the Senate just last week. There's quite a few things about Malcolm Roberts that I think are very interesting, and I've given quite a bit of coverage to him on this show. There is, however, one aspect, well, there's a couple of sides of what the One Nation is on about that I do have trouble with, and one part in particular of Malcolm's speech where he says that Australia should leave the UN, I think unfortunately really detracts from the credibility of much of what Malcolm says. But that appears to be more of the coming from that side of the One Nation, which has the more xenophobic kind of racist elements. Anyway, I'll get onto that later in the show. But let's begin with 9/11. Now, I've got a clip that I'm going to play to you, which is quite interesting, that I had not seen before. And this is a recording of an interview with Donald Trump on the day of September 11, 2001. And it has some very interesting little statements here by the Donald, which are very interesting when you consider, you know, where he's at now and what that may mean for his role as potential president of the United States. Here we go.
Debris.
Donald, you're probably the best known builder, particularly of great buildings in the city. There's a great deal of question about whether or not the damage and the ultimate destruction of the buildings was caused by the airplanes, by architectural defect, or possibly by bombs or aftershocks. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it was an architectural defect. You know, the World Trade Center was always known as a very, very strong building. Don't forget, that took a big bomb in the basement. Now, the basement is the most vulnerable place because that's your foundation. And it withstood that. And I got to see that area about 3 or 4 days after it took place, because one of my structural engineers actually took me for a tour because he did the building. And I said, I can't believe it. The building was standing solid and half of the columns were blown out. I mean, so this was an unbelievably powerful building. If you know anything about structure, it was one of the first buildings that was built from the outside. The steel, the reason the World Trade Center had such narrow windows is that in between all the windows, you had the steel on the outside. So you had the steel on the outside of the building. That's why when I first looked, and you had big, heavy I-beams, when I first looked at it, I couldn't believe it, because there was a hole in the steel. And this is steel that was, you remember the width of the windows in the World Trade Center, folks? I think, you know, if you were ever up there, they were quite narrow. And in between was this heavy steel. I said, how could a plane, even a 767 or 747 or whatever it might have been, how could it possibly go through the steel? I happen to think that they had not only a plane, but they had bombs that exploded almost simultaneously, because I just can't imagine anything being able to go through that wall. Most buildings are built with the steel is on the inside around the elevator shaft. This one was built from the outside, which is the strongest structure you can have. And it was almost just like a can of soup.
You know, Donald, we were looking at pictures all morning long of that plane coming into building number 2. And when you see that approach the far side, and then all of a sudden, within a matter of a millisecond, the explosion pops out the other side.
Right. I just think that it was a plane with more than just fuel. I think, obviously, they were very big planes. They were going very rapidly because I was also watching where the plane seemed to be not only going fast, it seemed to be coming down into the building. So it was getting the speed from going downhill, so to speak. It just seemed to me that to do that kind of destruction is even more than a big plane, because you're talking about taking out steel, the heaviest caliber steel that was used on a building. I mean, these buildings were rock solid. And, you know, it's just an amazing, it's an amazing thing. It's, this country is different today.
Okay, that's basically it. Very interesting to see Donald Trump giving some off-the-cuff opinions there. Now, some of what he's saying may jar with what 9/11 truth researchers have been saying over the years, and may appear to lend some sort of credibility to those who have taken the rather bizarre no plane kind of argument. I'm certainly not on that side of the equation, but I think that because he's actually said that, you know, the planes would not have been able to go through the steel, but then, and that's actually the argument that has been used by some of the people who've said that there were actually no planes, that there were just explosions, you know, and simulations of planes or whatever. Well, look, a lot more detailed research has been done on all this type of stuff and the mechanisms and the physics involved. And what I think is just interesting is that Donald Trump clearly gave an unfiltered opinion on this. Who knows what he would say now if he were asked about it. I'm sure it would be very different. But it shows that he was actually willing to spontaneously say what he thinks rather than quickly adhere to a prepackaged position, which is what we saw in the media so much after 9/11, is that you know, people in positions of power were very quick to follow the lead given them by the media. Now, my understanding of the physics and the momentum of the interaction of the plane with the building is that the planes were able to go through the steel of the building, through the gaps. Due to the massive momentum of the aircraft, the plane would have been essentially shredded, and most of it would have gone through. Some of it would have bounced off, but most of it would have just been shredded and gone through due to the massive momentum. But, of course, if you listen again to what Donald had said, he suggested that there may have been explosives in the aircraft. And indeed, that's still a possibility that hasn't ever been fully eliminated, that there may have been explosives in the nose of the plane. But let's move on. That's just a very, very interesting little clip there, which says something about Donald Trump, which I think is very interesting and worth thinking about. Let's talk a little about 9/11 propaganda, because there's been so much of it and so many documentaries over the years have been produced by mainstream media to manipulate public opinion, to give the appearance of reporting, while at the same time carefully editing and cutting out anything in the reporting that might lead the viewer to ask more questions or have doubts about the official story. And typically what they do, and we saw this again in 2016, they'll put together compilations of interviews, but there'll be very short snippets of interviews that will really just be focusing on the witness's emotional state. You know, I saw the terrible plane, I saw the terrible thing happen, I felt so terrible. And it's like, it's all just a catharsis of you identifying with their emotional pain. And any detail that they might give is quickly, you know, is actually edited out of the interview. And that detail that they might give about what they actually saw is potentially very important evidence and could be used in an investigation. But the news organizations make sure that they never include that. They never include detailed descriptions of what people actually saw. Just like, oh, there was an explosion, and oh, I felt so scared, you know. And it's a way of playing to the masses, to the lowest common denominator, and treating people like dumbed down children. That we just have to be given little stories about how people felt, and nothing about facts other than an official narrative, which is like, again, a story for children that is completely lacking in any meaningful, detailed explanation. Now, I just want to bring up a documentary which appeared from ITV. And this is titled Truth and Lies and Conspiracies of 9/11. And it is an attempt to cover some aspects of the various conspiracy theories of 9/11. Now, I haven't watched the whole thing. I've watched a few snippets of it. But what it appears to focus on is the Saudi connection and failures of the intelligence organizations in the US to deal with the evidence that they had, the intelligence that they had of an impending attack. It plays down the far more important aspects of the questions about 9/11. And it does a few tricks which we've seen many times in the past when it comes to deal with issues such as the controlled demolition of the Twin Towers. And Building 7, of course, which it doesn't even mention. It completely ignores Building 7, which, of course, is a red flag that this is probably a propaganda piece, even though it looks quite credible and does actually have quite a lot of interesting information in it. What it ignores and the way it treats what it does have is indicative of its basic intent, which is to kind of steer you away from asking difficult questions. Now, one technique which is used to great effect, in the years following September 11, is to focus on questions about the attacks that have come from sources that are not very professional or technically credible. And they've reused that technique again, tried and trusted technique, and they've interviewed Dylan Avery, the creator of Loose Change, and given him quite a lot of attention in the film. And, of course, Dylan Avery, a very young man in his early 20s, made the film Loose Change, which became an internet blockbuster, and he talks about that in the interview. But, of course, he's a completely non-technical person. He was not a professional, qualified person in any of the areas in which he did. He wasn't even a professional filmmaker. And, of course, it's that in itself makes him a great kind of weapon of propaganda. I'll get back to that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Stay with us. Back here with Truth News Radio. And as I was saying there, this ITV film on September 11 has an interview with Dylan Avery and talking about the film Loose Change. And let me be clear, I think Loose Change was a great film for its time, and considering it was made by a kid who didn't really have a lot of experience, and it had a lot of really important research in it, and important questions were asked, right? But all these years later, to refer back to that as if that is like the source of our questions and conspiracy theories about September 11, that is a propaganda technique. And using Dylan Avery again is itself a method of propaganda. And I think he may not be aware of it because, you know, they were quite respectful to him and it was a reasonable interview. But it was simply the choice to interview him rather than someone like Richard Gage or Stephen Jones or Niels Harrit, people, scientists, who have published in major scientific publications research, which is very, very important. You know, including the 2,700 architects and engineers who belong to the organization a911truth.org. I mean, these are the people that should be obviously interviewed in this ITV, you know, piece, this news piece, in investigating the conspiracies. But it's just a really low gutter level way of manipulating people's opinions. But it does work because most of the people who are going to watch this on TV don't know about ae911truth.org. They don't know about Niels Harrit and Richard Gage and Stephen Jones. They don't know that there is real, genuine, bona fide scientific research, and I'm going to share something with you shortly that's quite new on that level. They don't know that that exists. So they think, well, there's just this kid who made this film, and gee, it was a popular film because, you know, it was the beginning of a video on the internet. And Loose Change was actually originally on Google Video. It was before YouTube was launched. And it was the biggest hit on Google Video at that time. Now, actually, I'll play to you the interview with Dylan Avery, so you can get a feel for it. Then we'll move on to talk about this really important piece of research. Well, not really a piece of research. It's actually more of a compilation of existing research that's been published in a very, very important journal in Europe. But first of all, let's just play some of the interview here with Dylan Avery. Here we go.
Over the years, 9/11 has been turned into a booming industry. Amongst the most famous is the documentary Loose Change, first shown in 2005 and made by an aspiring filmmaker for a few thousand dollars.
When I made Loose Change, I was very much an idealist, a young idealist, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed. I believed I could change the world.
Back then, one poll indicated nearly 9 out of 10 Americans thought they weren't being told the truth. Loose Change appealed to a skeptical public, outlining as it did the most popular conspiracies, such as the attack on the Pentagon.
A Boeing 757 is 155 feet long, 44 feet high, has a 124-foot wingspan, and weighs almost 100 tons. Are we supposed to believe that it disappeared into this hole without leaving any wreckage on the outside?
We were the first internet blockbuster. We would check the Google Video Top 10. We were right there at number one. Got to a point where there was a new translation every day. And people didn't ask us, they just did it. We didn't make a single dime off of any of it.
As word about the film spread, there developed an increasingly angry debate between the self-styled truthers like Dylan and those who passed them off as little more than cranks. The main supporter of the official view was one of America's most widely read engineering magazines.
We found that none of the claims that we looked at held up. If any of the claims were true, this would be the scoop of the century. The conversation around 9/11 was so overheated. We tried to be very rational and very straightforward in our coverage.
At one point, during an increasingly feisty debate, the two sides came together.
The wingspan of the plane was about 124 and change, not Loose Change, but...
I found it very convenient that Hani Hanjour decided to choose that one particular section of the Pentagon to hit when he could have just dove straight right into the front door.
There was some hostilities. In the world of paranoid conspiracy theories...
There are no coincidences. Popular Mechanics came out and said, oh, well, you know, all these engineers and architects and all these intelligence officials all say that these kids are full of shit, so they're full of shit.
Today, Dylan's views have moderated. He doesn't stand by his more extreme claims, such as passengers being offloaded from Flight 93 before it crashed. Even so, he still believes that many of the questions posed by loose change are as relevant today as they've ever been.
Okay, I think that's enough. Actually, it's just about the end there of that little clip, which was actually posted by Dylan Avery on his Facebook feed. Now, look, the way that plays out, the editing is incredibly important. The production of this is incredibly important. You've got to understand there is an agenda at work, right? So the way they choose to phrase it, he believes, right? He believes this, he believes that. And they say, you know, he's actually moderated his views from some of the more extreme views. And, you know, he was this unqualified kid who made a film which became popular. And then counterbalance that with these highly professional people who have a magazine called Popular Mechanics, which sounds like a very, very important, serious scientific engineering publication, saying what appear to be facts. So without actually overtly introducing in any editorial slant on it, the viewer has to be left with the conclusion that that Popular Mechanics is obviously correct. Dylan Avery is a curious little phenomenon and someone who's actually already moderated some of his views. So, you know, who knows, he might moderate all of his views later. And, of course, let's not get into all that scientific research about the nanothermite and the detailed analysis of the collapse of the World Trade Center, as well, of course, as the smoking gun of some sort of inside job, which is Building 7. You know, we'll just completely edit that out. And those editing decisions in terms of what is put into the documentary clearly seal the case in terms of what this is. It is propaganda. But let's move on, because there's something very important I want to talk about, which is a new article which has appeared in the Journal of the European Physical Society. The journal is called Europhysics News. Now, it is the official journal of the European Physical Society, a non-profit organisation whose purpose is to promote physics and physicists in Europe through methods such as physics outreach. And its membership includes the national physical societies of 42 countries. Now, the title of the article is 15 Years Later on the Physics of High-Rise Building Collapses. And the authors are Stephen Jones, Robert Corroll, Anthony Zambotti, and Ted Walter. The article covers most of the ground in terms of research of the building collapses and arguments which contradict the official position of how those buildings came down. One aspect of it that they concentrate on a fair bit is the analysis of the Twin Towers collapse, which was actually done not by NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is the official government body, which was funded to research this, but done by a civil engineering professor, Zdenek Bazant, and his graduate student, Yong Zhu. And this kind of sideline research was actually put forward by NIST as their explanation of the collapse mechanism, even though they themselves declined to do their own research. And I'll explain a little bit more of that when we come back from the break. You're with Truth News from Australia. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Now, I'm just referring to the article here, which was published in Europhysics News, European Journal of the European Physical Society. And there is a section in the article here where they're talking about the way in which NIST acknowledges that the buildings came down in free fall and does not actually explain the mechanism of how that occurred. And just reading here from the article, when a group of petitioners filed a formal request for correction asking NIST to perform such an analysis, NIST replied that it was unable to provide a full explanation of the total collapse because the computer models were not able to converge on a solution. However, NIST did do one thing in an attempt to substantiate its assertion that the lower floors would not be able to arrest or slow the descent of the upper sections in a gravity-driven collapse. They cited a paper by civil engineering professor Zdenek Bazant and his graduate student Jung Ju, published in January 2002, which addressed the question of why a total collapse occurred. Now, I'll just paraphrase this because it's a little bit long-winded and complicated. The argument that Bazant and Zhu put forward, which is tacitly accepted by NIST, is that the upper section of the towers, in each case, kind of acted like a block, like a solid block, when it came down and crushed the building below the impact zone. So the planes impacted the building at a certain point, at different points on each building, so there was an above and a below impact zone. And what Bazant and Zhu are saying is that the upper section acted like a giant block falling down and crushing the material below all the way to the ground. Now, this view has been really quite soundly refuted by a lot of different researchers, a lot of people working within AE911truth.org. It's on the surface, it's quite palpably false because the building, that upper block, did not retain its solidity beyond the first couple of seconds of freefall. It disintegrated in midair, and you can actually see that. It's very, very clear from the videos. You can actually see that upper block just disintegrating. And so there's no way that there is the force, the momentum of an upper block crushing the building below. And there's a massive amount of building below in each case. And yet we see the building just falling apart, just disintegrating all the way to the ground. And there's a lot of scientific research in this and a lot of very detailed analysis. And this is published in a respected scientific journal. So I'll put a link up to that on the website and you can have a look at it. But you see, when we see mainstream media coverage and they don't refer to material like this and they don't refer to experts like this, that's all you really need to know to understand why it's propaganda, how it's propaganda. But let's move on, because we need to talk about barrel bombs, ladies and gentlemen. This is another type of propaganda, that particularly pernicious one, that has been used in the media to great effect. Certainly in Australian news, it has just been, you know, a couple of weeks ago, it was saturation news again. They've done it year after year. I'll just read to you a little from this ABC piece. Actually, there's a video here that goes with it. Let's just play a little of that for you. Here we go. Just waiting for that to load. Okay, this is actually just a video showing damage and children being lifted out of the rubble. And they're actually claiming, in this case, that that the Syrian government dropped barrel bombs filled with chlorine on civilians in Aleppo. Rescue workers in the besieged rebel-held area in the east of Aleppo said regime helicopters dropped the chlorine bombs. Unverified footage showed victims coughing and receiving treatment at a local hospital. 80 people were said to need treatment. Now, all of this reporting is coming from activists. I mean, it actually says here, Syrian activists, and it's unverified footage. But if you read the article, it's presented as news. It's not questioned at all. There is no alternative narrative. There is no attempt to apply any editorial journalistic integrity in reporting on this. And it's basically pitching the idea that the Syrian government is engage in this sort of totally barbaric practice of just, you know, showering people in chlorine, which of course is a very ineffective weapon. And it's highly unlikely that the Syrians would be wanting to use chlorine when they've got proper munitions, they've got the Russians helping them, that they don't need to be using chlorine. But again, you know, that proves nothing. But what's more important is that the evidence itself, the news itself, is coming from sources that are totally unverified. But let's just talk about barrel bombs, the whole concept of barrel bombs. Because what's very important to understand, right, is that what they're calling a barrel bomb, this is a word that was invented. And the word is used to describe a type of munition, which is kind of like a low-grade munition, which is an unguided type of bomb. And it's like an improvised type of bomb, which can have a variety of different things in it. It can have regular explosives, or it could have gas in it, or it could have oil. And such types of improvised explosives have been used in the past by the United States. They've actually been used, supposedly on our side, and in Iraq, supposedly on our side. And of course, the use of anti-personnel type materials, of course, is widespread in war. And we saw the Americans used napalm in Vietnam, and we've seen the Israelis use white phosphorus and cluster bombs in Gaza. This, although horrific, and I'm certainly no supporter of any type of, you know, dropping bombs on people, it's horrendous, right? But this is not a deliberately targeted technology that's designed to maximize civilian casualties. It's just an improvised type of bomb, which may be dropped from a helicopter or may be dropped from a jet. The fact that it's in a barrel or any type of container is irrelevant. But I think they use the phrase barrel bomb because it sounds barbaric, it sounds horrifying, it sounds crude. And this is very interesting about the narrative of the way the Syrians are portrayed, and the Syrian government is portrayed in this conflict, is that we're supposed to believe that they are uniquely sort of crude and barbaric and monstrous, when in fact the United States and its allies have continually used weapons that have caused massive numbers of civilian casualties. But we're led to believe that there is some distinction between the use of, like, targeted weapons and the use of weapons that are less targeted in terms of moral high ground. But even that falls apart when you see examples of the US having used fairly indiscriminate methods as well at different times. So the whole narrative just falls apart. And I want to play to you a couple of interviews that were actually done with President Bashar al-Assad, in which he speaks in English very articulately, very lucidly, about the propaganda aspect of this. But let me just preface that with a brief definition of barrel bomb from Wikipedia. A barrel bomb is an improvised, unguided bomb, sometimes described as a flying improvised explosive device, and are made from large barrel-shaped metal containers that have been filled with high explosive, shrapnel oil or chemicals, and dropped from a helicopter or an airplane. We're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be here for one more segment. Stay with us.
Happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it?
Hi, welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. Just talking about Syria and barrel bombs. And now, let's be clear, war is hell. Bombs are horrendous. They do horrific damage and they kill people indiscriminately. That's what bombs do, that's what a bomb is, right? And, you know, bullets often kill people indiscriminately too. Because even though you're aiming at a target, the bullet can either miss the target or it can go right through the target and hit another target. And we see in conflicts the use of, you know, what they call surgical strikes, the use of weapons that are aimed at targeting one specific target. But we also see the use of indiscriminate techniques. And they are also another technique that is actually used in warfare, especially when you're fighting against an army. You know, when it's different when you're fighting against insurgencies or, you know, small groups where you just want to target one house, right? That's what they use surgical strikes for. But quite often, you know, you're dealing with a very large force of opponents. You actually, in warfare, you have to use more indiscriminate methods. That's the way it is. War is hell, right? Now, I want to play to you a clip from an interview with President Bashar al-Assad, which was done in February of 2015, in which he addresses this propaganda concept of barrel bombs. And bear in mind, you know, this word, barrel bomb, was just a term that was invented to basically demonize, to make it appear that something is particularly evil, particularly heinous. That's my understanding of it. And if you can see here, listening to President Assad, he's just talking common sense when he responds to the interview here, question on the BBC.
Accept it.
I've spent time on the front line with soldiers from the Syrian army who insisted that they were patriotic, that they were patriots. Mm-hmm. They weren't cold-blooded killers. But I've also interviewed people, and so have many other journalists and human rights people and so on, who say that they have suffered badly at the hands of Syrian soldiers. They can't all have been lying, surely.
How surely? Why are you sure?
Well, because the weight of testimony, Human Rights Watch, for example, 30th of January this year, has said that forces loyal to Bashar al-Assad, quote, have deliberately and viciously attacked civilians in opposition-held areas using indiscriminate weapons, notoriously barrel bombs.
This is childish story that keep repeating in the West.
It's childish.
Childish. Why? Again, if somebody who is against his people and again the regional power and the great powers in the West and survive, how? If you kill the Syrian people, they support you or they become against you. As long as you have the public support, it means you are defending the people. If you kill the people, they will be against you. That's what, common logic, common sense.
What about barrel bombs? You don't deny that your forces use them.
I know about the army. They use bullets, missiles, and bombs. I haven't heard of army using barrels or maybe cooking pots.
Large barrels full of explosives and projectiles which are dropped from helicopters and explode with devastating effect. There's been a lot of testimony about these things.
They're called bombs. We have bombs, missiles and bullets.
So you wouldn't deny that included under the category of bombs are these barrel bombs, which are indiscriminate weapons?
No, there's no indiscriminate weapons. When you shoot, you aim. And when you shoot, when you aim at terrorists in order to protect civilians. Again, if you're talking about casualty, That's war. You cannot have war without casualty.
There are always casualties in war, and civilians die as well, but it is the responsibility under international humanitarian law for belligerents on both sides to do everything they can to protect civilians. And the accusation against the Syrian army is that by using barrel bombs, indiscriminate weapons, and Stephane de Mistura, again, the UN envoy, he's talked about the constant fear of barrel bombs, means that you are not respecting humanitarian law by protecting your own people. What do you say to that?
First of all, we've been attacked in Damascus and in Aleppo. We've been attacked by the rebels, not vice versa. They've been attacking the Syrian with mortars. So you have to retaliate and defend your people. That's self-evident. Second, again, you are talking about somebody or government who's killing its people and the people supporting the government. This is contradiction. There's no logic in it.
Of course,
but you have answer. How can you have support and kill the people at the same time?
Of course, you have many supporters among part of the Syrian population. But in areas held by the rebels, the accusation is your people have used indiscriminate weapons, which they may well have attacked places where there are armed rebels. But because there are civilians there as well, the civilians have also died. Mm-hmm. And if you used less indiscriminate weapons, like barrel bombs, then this kind of thing would not be happening.
During the war, you can have any kind of recrimination, any kind of allegations. Every party could blame the other one. But you have to talk about the reality. The family of those fighters, they came to the government in order to have refuge, not vice versa. You can go now and see where they live and who take care of them. If we would kill civilians, civilians should fled to the other side, not to come to us,
now,
the government side.
If you stopped...
Okay, I'll just play to you now another clip, which was done a little later, I believe, in the year, still from 2015, again, still talking about the subject of barrel bombs. Assad has been quite articulate on this and really sums it up very, very well. I think it's best to just listen to what the president of Syria is saying in relation to these allegations.
This is very important, the barrel bomb. What are barrel bombs? They say barrel bombs as a bomb that killed people indiscriminately. This is not because it doesn't aim. This is not realistic for one reason, because no army uses bomb that doesn't aim. And the proof to what I'm saying, that you don't talk about the shape of a bomb to call it barrel or cylindrical or whatever. The state of the art drones, American drones in Pakistan, Afghanistan, in Yemen, with the state of the art precision missile has killed more civilians and innocent than killing terrorists. So it's not about this bomb that doesn't aim, that kills discriminately. It's about the way you use it.
But you are acknowledging then that you do use it. You do use barrel bombs. You're just saying
there's no such a thing called barrel bombs. You have bombs. And any bombs is about killing. It's not about tingling people.
Understand what a barrel bomb is. I mean, they understand how it's put together, what's put inside of the barrel, and they understand how it's dropped from helicopters.
No, we have a very good military industry for you.
Just want to pause it there. The interviewer said most people understand what a barrel bomb is and how it's put together. How on earth would most people understand that? That is a leading comment, which is quite despicable, really. Most people have no idea what a barrel bomb is. They just hear the word, and then the emotive effect of it makes them angry. You know, oh, barrel bombs, bad. Barrel bombs, bad. Anyway, just return you to the interview now.
For years, for decades in Syria, we don't have to make bombs, very primitive one, very malicious one. This bomb, this term, was used only to demonize the Syrian army. That's it. This is part of the propaganda.
If barrel bombs were used by the Syrian army, would you order the Syrian army to stop using barrel bombs?
Again, what this term? What the barrel bomb is? I mean, do you describe the missile that you have by being cylindrical?
It's a bomb that inflicts terrible civilian casualties.
Any bomb is made, and missile and even bullet is made to make casualty, but not civilian. There's no military means was made in order not to kill. But how you use it, it's again about the way you use it. It's not about the bomb. If you want to talk about casualties, that's another issue. Every war is malignant. Every war is bad. You don't have benign war. And that's why wars are bad, because you always have casualties. But that's not related to certain kind of bombs or bullets or whatever. This is another, completely another issue.
Are you denying that their barrel bombs are being used and inflicting great casualties?
Again, I always say,
what is a barrel bomb?
We use a bomb. Yeah. We use missiles. We use airplanes. We use bullets. You don't describe what we use by the shape, whether it's called barrel, spherical, cylindrical, and so on. You don't describe it this way. You use armaments. If you have casualties, it's a mistake that could happen in every war. But your aim is always to kill terrorists, not to kill your people, because you have support by your people, you cannot kill
them. But you are acknowledging that they come from helicopters, barrel bombs.
This is a technical issue, military issue, how to throw. No, you can throw them.
But only one?
No. You can throw bombs by any airplanes. You can throw them by missiles. You don't have to use helicopters. You can use them the way you want.
But if I hear you correctly, is that you acknowledge that their barrel bombs are being used, but they're like other bombs in your judgment, and they're not necessarily any different than other weapons. That's what you seem to be saying.
We don't have a bomb that's called barrel bomb. This name came through the media, or from the media.
Well, we can describe
it. We don't have
it.
What you call our bombs, that's related to the media. And that's used by the militant, then adopted by the West in order to demonize the Syrian army. We don't have something called barrel bombs that killed indiscriminately. If you have a strong bomb or a weak bomb or good bomb or whatever, I mean, you can call it whatever you want. We have regular bombs, traditional armaments. That's what we have.
You have often spoken about the danger.
So let me just give a quick summary of this from my own perspective. A bomb is a device which explodes and causes devastation in all directions. Like the blast wave goes out in all directions from where it detonates. By definition, a bomb is somewhat indiscriminate, but the smaller the bomb is, the less damage it does, right? And if you're aiming at a specific target, if you're able to aim the bomb effectively at a target, then you won't potentially hit other targets, although that is dependent on the power of the bomb. And we've seen with American munitions, so many times civilians are killed because the bombs are very powerful. So if there happens to be a civilian wandering nearby where the bomb is going off, I mean, they can just be hit by a stray piece of shrapnel and they're dead, you know. It's a very frustrating topic. Anyway, we are at the end of the show. It has been a great pleasure talking to you today. I hope you found some of this interesting. I didn't have time, unfortunately, to cover Malcolm Roberts' maiden speech. I will actually slot that in for next week. So, without further ado, let me say goodbye, and we'll see you again next week. Truth News Radio Australia, signing out.